Before we get to today's podcast, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, Sports with Katie Nolan. It's a weekly show about sports and all the things tangentially related to sports. Its friends would describe it as curious, fun, and a podcast. Weekly guests will include sports fans from all sorts of industries, comedy, film, television, science. So be sure to check that one out. Download and subscribe to Sports and the Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Let's talk about Daniel. A year ago, he resolved to stop putting off what he wanted to do, get into information technology. Daniel enrolled in My Computer Career and is now already a few months into his IT career. Make 2020 your year. There are millions of unfilled cybersecurity positions in the U.S. right now, and My Computer Career is training people to help fill them. No IT experience or education? No problem. It's not rocket science. It's My Computer Career. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an IT pro in months, not years. Attend classes on campus or live online just twice a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year, new career your resolution and take the free career evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are, in fact, a hater. It's that time of week where we do an interview. Joining us now live from Washington, D.C. Check him out at theundefeated.com. His name's Dominique Foxworth. Dominique, you ducking that Rona?
Oh, every day I do.
How ashy are your hands? I feel like mine could
stay
bleed.
Ashy. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we can worry about moisturizing after we get clear of this Rona situation.
Man, listen, I was in the bathroom at the office one day, and I went to the urinal. And somebody walked out of stall while I was at the urinal, and I heard them walk out, and I heard that door open and shut, but I didn't hear no water. I wanted to stop, like, right then and there and run outside and find out who the culprit was.
How could – yeah, I actually – not in my office, but just in general life, I've seen people not wash their hands when they leave the bathroom. Like, it's disgusting to start with, but – during these trying times, like, yeah, like please.
It can happen. Like, if you want to go to the desk and use a hand sanitizer, okay, whatever, right? Like, but in these trying times, we talking about something different.
And it's not just about you is the thing that I think that that's the only thing that makes me, or that's the main thing that makes me, extra vigilant is that it's not about you. I feel like the statistics suggest that if many of us of healthy age catch the Rona, we can beat it. But, you carrying this around and you seeing old people and young people and everybody else, like, that's your responsibility. It's one of those things where it's about the community, not necessarily you.
Yeah, no, that's the part that's getting me. Like, I'm looking at these sports leagues right now, the ones that just refuse to shut down because they love that money so much, right? Hey, man, this is about something bigger. We're trying to stop this from taking over the world. And people are like, but the tickets are cheap.
I mean, I guess if you're, but that's the thing. If your risk reward analysis suggests that the risk of catching that Rona is worth the reward of getting front row seats, I would generally say knock yourself out. But again, it's not about you. Like, you could get that Rona on your shirt and bring it back to your friends and family. Like, just relax.
Look, man,
sit down somewhere.
Look, man, my dad's 83 years old.
Exactly.
We're supposed to do something to honor him this weekend, and we had to fight with some people to shut it down. Like, we could not get them to get, like, no, Holmes. Like, we can't do this. This is not what it can be and everything else. And I get it, man. People have spent the money, right? Like, that's really what it comes down to. You have spent the money on these things, man. In Italy, they out here canceling funerals, right? They are saying that the funeral cannot go down. That should tell you everything you need to know.
No matter what you spend, it ain't worth your life.
No, no.
Or anybody else's for that matter.
No. But here we are. Now, I wanted to have you on this week because you were very much involved in the negotiation of the 2011 collective bargaining agreement for the NFL. And now that agreement is up and we're trying to figure out what's going on with this new one. It's getting a little bit wonky with guys voting and then saying they don't want to vote. You know, they want to take their votes back. Can't quite tell if those people had voted yes or if those people had voted no. There seems to be a very clear chasm between the guys who don't make a lot of money playing football and the guys who do make a lot of money playing football. First question is, what just the deal itself, what did you think of it?
So, I mean, it's a complex situation. Like, I think the deal is, it depends on what you think of the risk of playing an extra game. So, I don't know. I don't know what it adds to you. Like, there is no amount of money that's worth a 50% increase in, like, head and neck injuries and, like, long-term health care of players that are involved in football. Like, there's no amount of money that will make that worth it. But I guess I have a hard time evaluating how valuable or how dangerous that is, you know? So, like, at 16 games, there's a certain amount of danger that I felt like was worth taking, I guess, for me at least. All the information about head injuries and all that stuff came out in 2008. Around that time, I was already in the league. So I was like, we're going to ride this thing on out. We committed. I had not signed a big deal yet. We're going to ride it out till we get a big deal. Then after that, I'm going to ride off into the sunset. But guys who came into the league now understanding 17 games worth of risk, I don't know how it feels to think about adding an extra game. And that might shorten your career. So we think about guys who only play two or three seasons. There's a higher probability that they fall out of the league even sooner, which I think impacts their lives even more. So people talking about how you just add this extra game and all the kind of league minimum guys should be excited because they're going to get a couple hundred thousand more dollars. I'm not sure that it pans out that way. It might shorten their careers and then they end up with millions less.
Well, one thing that I thought about when this first happened is I was like, good luck to all you guys with the union trying to convince these dudes that 17 is the same as 16.
Oh, yeah.
Right, because you could talk about we're going to cut practice time and everything else, but I think cats think of this really in terms of games and trying to tell them the 17 games, plus, by the way, the 2 seed no longer gets a bye, right? So we're adding games to that. I don't know how you look those dudes in the eye and be like, 17 equals 16. That was the part where I was like, I just don't know how this is going to sell. Apparently it sold well enough, but that's where I found myself confused.
Yeah, I don't think anybody bought that. I don't think anyone is, if they were selling it, no one bought the idea that there's possibly enough practices that you can take away that is the equivalent of the amount of collisions you'll have in a 17th game. Like, we all understand that the intensity, the risk, and it's not just head collisions, it's hip joints, knees, backs, shoulders, necks, all that stuff. Everyone knows that a game is different than preseason game. It's different than practice, and you can eliminate practice altogether and eliminate all off-season workouts, and it will not equal up to the amount of wear and tear that happens in a 17th game. And I think anybody who played the game, even at a college level, would recognize that, and I suspect most high schools would recognize that there's nothing close to the way you feel and the toll that it takes on your body to play in an NFL game.
I remember I was talking online once, and Michael Wright, who works at NBA.com now, he was a big time high school football player, and he talked about how much, like, by the time he had gotten to toward the end of the playoffs, he was almost hoping to lose just because it hurt so much.
Yeah, I think most guys in NFL recognize, not that they're hoping to lose, but they recognize that feeling when you lose in a playoff. It's dejection and sadness for that whole day and night and maybe part of the next day. But once you wake up that next morning and you're like, man, I ain't gotta go to work, I ain't gotta do nothing, it feels great. So I know that very few guys will say this openly, but when the season is over, that's a celebration. You made it to the end of the season. You may not have won the Super Bowl, but you won something.
So for you, looking at this deal, this is my read on it is it seems really great for the guys at the lower end of the income distribution, which is most of the league. I see the room that the guys who make more money and who are starters have to complain about it, and that's why they get to vote no, but they're just kind of going to get outnumbered by the guys that can't walk away from 100 G's.
Yeah, but I disagree a little bit with that classification is because the guys who are like the lower end rank and file, as people call it, like none of them think of themselves as rank and file. They
right.
think of themselves as soon to be stars or about to get that next deal type of guy. So I know when we're negotiating deals, no one's thinking like, man, let's get this league minimum up. Everyone's thinking I'm not a league minimum guy, and if I am right now, it's because I haven't gotten my chance. So I'm not sure that it breaks down the way everyone assumes that the guys are fighting for that extra $100,000 because no one signed up to play football to make $200,000, $300,000, $800,000, $900,000. People, when they're kids, dream about playing football so they can make the amount of money they need to like redirect their family's future. Like that's the type of money you're looking for. And that ain't in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I'm not in the heads of these kind of rank and file guys, but I don't suspect that many of them are like clamoring to get this extra couple hundred thousand dollars, honestly.
I do wonder on that front, like at what point for players do they develop the self-awareness to be like, oh, okay, this is where
never.
I am in the league. None.
No, never. Never. Like it's, I imagine there are a couple of guys in the league, but most of the time what happens for guys is you, after your first contract, at some point you've proven to somebody that you are worth an extension. And if you are worth that extension, you get that extension. If you don't, then you're out of the league. Like they go get somebody because the league minimum jumps. So they go get another rookie who can come in and run down on kickoffs and back up certain positions. They go get somebody else who can do that for much cheaper. So it's, and every guy kind of feels like they're going to eventually get their opportunity. It just hasn't worked out for them because it's always worked out for them up until this point. Like they're in the league. No one thought they were going to get there, but they got there. So they know that this opportunity is coming. And maybe there's a couple of guys who are like, man, this is going to be a couple years. I'm going to grab this money and run. But I think most guys are trying to hit the lotto and make that big second contract money.
So to you, how does this deal shape up for the guys that are not on the low end of the distribution?
I mean, I think to be honest with you, if you really think about it, the star guys, this isn't really going to impact very many of them. The guys who are stars right now, unless they're coming up on free agency pretty soon, that's the guys who's going to impact. Those guys are already have their contracts set and they're going to make a certain amount of money. If they go to the 17th game, they're going to get 1/16th added to their contract to make it so that they're not working more for less games. So that's cool. But most of those guys, once they come up on free agency again, they are not as marketable commodities. So they don't have the leverage to get what they want. Like the people who will really benefit from it is guys who are in their second or third year right now, maybe, who in 2 or 3 years will be able to hit free agency. And then the salary cap will be through the roof. And people I've talked to have said that it's going to get up to $300 to $400 million somewhere midway through this deal. Right now, just for comparison, the salary cap is going to be at about $200 million. So if you imagine that, just, it won't work out exactly this way, but if you imagine a top paid player at every position is going to be making double in about 3 to 4 years, those are the guys it's going to work out for. Everyone else, I feel like the changes are minuscule and they won't impact them. Like the guys who are rank and file guys now, they make a couple $100,000 more this year and next year, and then they'll be out of the league. I know that's a lot of money, but that's not changing anything really for those guys. And the guys who are in their 8th, 9th, 10th year, by the time this money makes this big jump, don't nobody want them. They're going to be coaching or trying to take my job talking to you on podcasts.
Well, here's my question. Are these teams actually going to spend up to the cap?
Yeah. I mean, I assume that they haven't taken out any minimum spend requirement. So there is no rule that they have to spend 100% of the cap. But I believe in the last deal, it was 89% of the cap. I suspect, at least I heard, that they were going to move that up some, so they won't spend all 400 if it gets to 400, but they'll be spending pretty close to it.
Yeah, and I think that part, like the idea, and we don't know what the media deals are going to be, right? Because the owners want to get in and get this done quickly so they can go out there and get the money on these media deals, and that's going to provide a kicker, apparently, to the players, depending upon how much of that money comes up. And I have no grasp on how much money that's going to be, as live sports are the one thing that people watch live. Therefore, they should be able to get the world for it.
Yeah, and all these companies seemingly have endless amounts of money to pay for it, and there's so many different media outlets competing. You think about all the streaming services that are trying to kind of fight to win that, to win the kind of streaming wars, because that sooner or later, all these things are not going to survive. And the one that's going to survive, if any one of them can get some exclusive NFL rights, that's the one that wins immediately. And you can imagine how many billions of dollars that is worth in the long run if you are the streaming service of America. Like, that's worth whatever investment it requires to win the NFL. The only question is the NFL willing to exclusively stream some games online and not have them open to the general public?
And also know this, people need to get this, that like, if DirecTV were to lose the Sunday ticket, there are real questions as to whether or not DirecTV would still exist.
Yeah, RIP. Like, them satellites gonna get used for something else.
Yeah, like that's how significant that is. That's why people who know this, if you have tried to get the Sunday ticket streaming, you have to demonstrate to DirecTV that you cannot get their service at your place. Cause they're like, no, put that dish in the bag, baby. Like, get it all.
Yeah, that's the only reason why they're there. I mean, you're right. I don't think it survives without that. And I don't imagine that the NFL is interested. I know they've kind of simulcast things on Amazon, right? And also on TV at the same time. I don't know that they're ready to go to putting some games exclusively online, but I imagine if Apple TV, if Netflix, if Hulu, if Peacock, like all these streaming services that pop up, Disney Plus, like if any of them were, if the NFL was willing to give any of them exclusive rights to any single game or any series of games, it's game over. I don't care how good all your shows are. I don't care what you're showing. If you got football, you win.
People love it, man. Like
I'm happy they do.
Yeah. No, they love it. I mean, we don't know what to do with our, it's so funny. Every time football season ends, they're like, yo, I don't know what to do with my Sundays. Like, yo, we do this every year. Go hug your kids.
Oh, man. I mean, I know what to do with my Sundays, but I appreciate it. I think I love football for what it's done for my life, less than the games themselves. But the Super Bowl, that's pretty fun. Yeah. I'd be upset if we ain't had that.
All right, we'll be back in a minute with Dominique Foxworth. But first, what if a quarterback completed 4 out of 5 of his passes? Or a point guard hit 4 out of 5 shots behind the arc? Well, now when you're hiring, you can play at that level. Because 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. No matter the industry, healthcare to manufacturing to business services, ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. And today you can try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for the right candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter's AI scouts talent for you. First, when you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites. Then, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right skills and experience, and invites them to apply to your job. So you get qualified candidates fast. And now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now, I'm curious this for you, somebody who's worked with the union, and I think what I feel like, and I know you disagree a bit with the characterization, but I do feel like this collective bargaining round of negotiations has made it easier for some people to see when they talk about how the NFLPA is so weak, the difficulty of dealing with a membership this size with this many people with this many different interests. So for you and working with it in 2011, how hard was it just trying to get everybody together on what was going on?
It wasn't that hard. I think we did a great job then of communicating. We had a very strong executive committee that had developed a lot of trust with all the players. And I think that was the difference, was the communication, because it seems like the guys now are upset, because we always had people who were kind of rebel rousers, and I might have fallen into that category, but I was super involved. So it's hard for, I understand if you're on the executive committee or you're a rep and then they give you a deal that you weren't involved in negotiating and you didn't know anything about, and they give you a deal and say, this is the best we can do, sign it. Like I would have been furious too. And I think that's how some of the players felt. That's not how we felt. Everybody was informed and everyone was up to date, and they also had a great deal of trust in the executive committee that was there and Kevin Mawai, who was the president at the time. So I think that's, from the outside looking in, that feels like the difference. It doesn't seem like the players look at the executive committee or the executive committee themselves feel like they were sufficiently involved. And you see that in Russell Okung, who filed a NLRB suit against the union, and he was on the executive committee. So that's, those type of fractures didn't happen for us. And that's, I think, the difference. I don't know that the difference in having a better deal or worse deal. It's just we were kind of more united and felt more informed and more part of the union.
So what did you think when Okung put this complaint in with the NLRB?
I don't know, man. Like, Russell has a reputation for kind of being that guy who's not afraid to say and do things that are unusual. And like, I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily, but when you get to the point where you are filing charges against your own union, like that's scary. I don't know the details of the case. Obviously I'm not in the union, so I'm not going to try to take one side or the other. But if you ever, I can say unequivocally, if you ever get to that point, you're in a bad place. if one of the leaders, essentially the executive committee, is vice presidents. There are 10 vice presidents. There's one president. That's the top of the union. If one of them is looking back at you and said that you did things illegal in this process, that's a bad place to be. And whether you did anything illegal or not, like, it's perception is reality is one of those cliches that kind of sound dumb and you just throw them out there. But it's kind of true in this place. It doesn't matter whether you actually did anything illegal or not. You're in a bad place if any one person, particularly in a leadership role, is looking at you like, man, I need to bring in the law. That's, you know what's going to help me? The law. That's you're not in a good place.
And is that going to, like, it doesn't seem like that would be able to move fast enough to stop what's going on with this agreement anyway, right? Like, was this more, you think, maybe symbolic than anything else?
Yeah, I assume so. Like, you can, the NLRB can put a hold on certain things. So I assume that they can at some point. And I don't know the details of the case. You can get damages or something like that after this is all done. So I, to be honest with you, you probably have to get a legal expert to speak more directly to this than I can. But I just think from where you are standing, as you try to finalize this deal, you're in a bad place if you think that you're going to galvanize support if the people who are tasked with leading the organization don't even support it.
Yeah, because I was like, what's it like to be D. Smith when that comes across your desk?
My God. I mean, so I was heavily involved in union, obviously, went on to business school and worked at the basketball union. And people have, ever since I left the union, were like, hey, you ever think about executive director of the union? And I always say, absolutely not. Like, that job is too hard. It's too stressful. It doesn't pay enough for me to want to subject myself to that. And now everyone else finally agrees. Like, it's so hard. And I don't think that, I think it's tough. People, kind of juxtapose the NFL union with the other leagues and argue that this union is the worst and it's harder to do this. I'm not sure that I agree with that, because when I was at the basketball union, one of the things that's so challenging about that union is the disparity between players is even huger than the disparity between players in the NFL. So I know huger is not a word, but it is now. If you think about the star guys, even though the money isn't all that big a difference because they have max salaries and that suppresses the stars' salaries in order to, like, redistribute some of the salaries to the lower guys, even though their salaries aren't as big, if you think about how close in proximity and interests the stars in the NBA are to the ownership, that's so, so different. Like, you actually can feasibly go on to own a team. You see Michael Jordan, you go on to own a team. You've heard LeBron James say things like, when he's done, he wants to own a team. Like, that's hard. His relationship with Adam Silver, all of those star guys, Chris Paul, all of them, and Kevin Durant, like, their relationship to the league is just as strong, if not stronger, than it is with the rest of their team. If you think about even guys who don't go on to own teams, they are around the game. They still bring Bill Russell out to hand out the MVP trophy. Like, that doesn't happen in the NFL. So I think the NBA has this situation where everyone views it as one big happy family, which it feels like it is for now, which is nice. But you saw what happened when the NBA wanted to take back some of that basketball related revenue. They took it back. And they ain't never gave it back, and they never gonna give it back again. And if we go forward like that, the same thing is gonna happen. And for baseball, it's similar, where they have constructed a league in a way that they've made the financial disparity between the top stars and everyone else so big that they've separated them also from the rank and file of the union. It's so hard to be able to enact any, like, major change if you look at your constituents and some of them, like, their interests, frankly, and I don't fault them, their interest in some cases is more aligned with that of management.
Yeah, the NBA has also done, the middle class guys typically run that union, right? And so the gains, right, there have been great gains for the guys in the middle. Because one thing you say, football, apparently they tried to basically put in a max salary specifically for quarterbacks, but they tried to put in a max salary in the NFL, and they were like, nah, we're not going for that. And those middle dudes in the NBA was like, mofo us.
Right, yeah. I mean, they did that. That happened. And I think that also, like, was something that was supported by the owners. So, like, I think that happens is you get these unlikely, kind of partnerships, and the owners don't want to be in that position. Cause when they instituted, if I remember correctly, instituted those max salaries, the cap in the NBA was a lot softer than it is now. So yes, having those max salaries also helped to give them some certainty on their cause. So no one ever thinks about it that way, but being able to build those alliances. I know in our last CBA negotiation, one of the alliances that we were able to like build with the other side was the big money owners were on our side in many ways because they wanted to reduce the amount of revenue sharing that they did. And they wanted to encourage the small market teams to spend more money, and also invest in making more money. So we kind of changed the way that the revenue was split across different revenue streams to encourage that because that means more money for us all and hopefully less revenue sharing for them.
I also think that one part of this that often gets lost is, yeah, the players got their splits, but owner versus owner has messed up a lot of agreements.
Oh, absolutely. They hate each other. I know it's so easy to look at them and say, oh, these are all white men billionaires. And I know there's it's not always all white men, but you kind of look at them and say everything's the same. No, that's not the same, especially as you get more and more new owners in the league that have the money to buy an NFL team as an ornament, essentially. They're out here flossing on them, and it's not their main source of revenue. A lot of those old money teams where their major source of revenue is their team, they run it entirely differently, and their interests are entirely different, where some teams are concerned with winning a Super Bowl, and other teams are concerned with staying afloat. And as ridiculous as that sounds, it's true in some cases, because the disparity is so big for some of those bigger teams. And you see, like, the Raiders are a good example. They moved to Vegas and maybe their fortunes will change, but they ain't got nothing else. Like, the Davis family is the Raiders. It's not like they built some tech company and came over and just bought the Raiders. Like, nah, the Raiders are the reason why they got money.
And also, don't forget this. Do you know when Al Davis got 50% ownership share in the Raiders?
I don't.
2003. Wow. You ever heard the story about how he strong-armed that team?
No.
So basically, Al was all, they had a three-person board of partners, right? In 1972, one of the dudes went to the Olympics in Munich. While he was gone, Al had some kind of vote to make him the managing. You remember, he used to come up all the time in Raiders games that he was the managing general partner. While that dude was in, by the way, and don't forget, there was a lot going on in Munich during the Olympics. Yeah, you know how tired that man was to come back and find out that Al Davis had strong-armed his team from him while he was gone?
Man, I've joked many times that the best show on TV would be a show that, like, goes behind the scenes of what it's like to own a professional sports team. Because this type of stuff, you got that story. I got tons of other stories that I probably shouldn't share here. I'll tell you, we can roll that sound, and I can tell you at that point.
No, we need to make the Al Davis movie, though. That's the most gangster thing in the world. God. Like, the idea that Al Davis was a football coach and worked his way to the whole damn team. Just think about that. Like, imagine if one day Bob Kraft decided to go on vacation and came back and Bill Belichick was the owner now.
Oh, you better not say that out loud. Bill Belichick will call you and ask him to put together a plan. They trying to force that Tom Brady on him, and he like, no, not again. Never again. I'm going to own this team.
But you mentioned, I think the thing with owners, football, it gets to be interesting compared to the other sports because unlike the other sports, football doesn't have local television deals. Like, there are ways that you can generate local revenue, but it's not via television because of the nature of the TV deal. Where in basketball, it's a huge variance in how much money these teams are getting into each other because of the huge variance in what they can get from a local television deal. You can only get so much out of TV deal in Oklahoma City versus San Francisco. Like, you're not going to be able to get the same thing. Football, at least they get that one out of the way. But no, some of these teams, like when the Steelers built that stadium, it was crucial because they couldn't get free agents because they didn't have cash.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's true of baseball too, and like the local money comes from there a lot, but I think football, the big disparity comes in like sponsorships and tickets and gates and that stuff, which is not nearly as big as TV revenue. But you imagine what sponsorship in Dallas is compared to sponsorship in Jacksonville. Like, it ain't even close. So like those small market teams and those low, like, less financially stable owners are looking at Jerry and looking at the New York teams like, y'all ain't special. You ain't managed this. You just happen to be in a big city. So give us some of this money. And I mean, I understand the way they feel. It's like, a franchise. I mean, they call them franchises for a reason. Like McDonald's franchise, you wouldn't expect necessarily for the one in New York. You would expect the one in New York to do better than ones in, I don't know, Alabama somewhere. And those guys in New York are trying to take in all the money. And the guys in Alabama are saying, well, the reason why people go to McDonald's is because they can trust the way it is all over the place. So your success is somewhat in part like because of our success. So you owe us some of that money. And I mean, I honestly don't necessarily disagree with them.
I would love to see the differences the teams charge for that advertisement through the goalpost, right? Like you know what I mean? Like
yeah,
the one right
on the net.
Yeah, there's one on the net, but the one right over.
Yeah, yeah.
Because right. I remember the Cowboys were the first team I ever remember selling that. Jerry sold it to TCBY, right? Like every time somebody scored a touchdown in the Cowboys game. And what I hadn't thought about was, damn, the Cowboys are on national television 8 times a week. You can't get that same number in Jacksonville, baby.
No, absolutely not. They are always on TV, and we always talking about them on here. So when we show them highlights, you might catch a glimpse of TCBY there too.
Yep.
That's money well spent. And on top of it, you might get you some free seats to go watch some football game. Like it's a good deal. Whereas that same deal in Cincinnati ain't quite the same.
Yo, let me tell you something I peeped about the NBA right fast. This is very interesting. I've been waiting for the right time to bring this up, but I think that this is worth noting. If you watch a nationally broadcast game in the NBA, the basket stanchion is sponsored, I think, by Spalding. But in a nationally broadcast game, they got the same stanchions. But the local broadcast, they sell that stanchion to, you know, locally, individually. There is a credit union in Utah called America First. America First Credit Union. And whenever you turn on a Utah Jazz game, it says America First on the basket. And I'd be like, I can't be the only person that sees this.
Well, I never noticed it, honestly.
Yeah, because you have to watch it on League Pass. You don't notice it unless you're watching League Pass, because otherwise you're watching the national broadcast and it just blends in. But I'm like, yo, does that say America First? And nobody said anything about this? And I get it. It's a credit union, but they get it. Everybody know what I'm talking about right now. You know what I'm saying? So, like, everybody's playing a different game. Like, in New York, you could have a totally different, like, you would have a totally different company on that stanchion if you want to, right? Like, I'd love to see who the people are in all the different places, right? Like, Frenchies might have the one in Houston. That would be fantastic if they did. But, dude, I saw it at America First, and I was like, oh, we just doing this.
It doesn't say America's First Credit Union, you got to put Credit Union on there. You can't just put America First on the stanchion.
Except it's a local broadcast. So the only people noticing are the locals. I need to check the next time if it says credit union, because I recall when I had to try to figure out what it was, I Googled America First Utah Jazz because I wasn't sure what was going on. Like, I don't know how big the font is on the credit union part, but if anybody that's out there watching the League Pass, go turn on a Utah Jazz game and they're like, yo, this is the credit union for us. And it's a credit union, right? Like, we're not talking about some far-flung business.
That is a very important part of everyone's wealth is being able to get credit from a credit union.
Yes.
And, oh, man.
America First, baby. America
I feel
first.
Like that is the motto for a lot of credit unions across this country for many years.
Yes. More with Dominique Foxworth in a minute, but first, when it comes to scoring great hires for your business, you may be up against a few obstacles like an overwhelming amount of resumes, too many applicants but not enough of the right ones, trouble spotting the most qualified candidates in a sea of possibilities. That's why you need ZipRecruiter on your team. No matter the industry, healthcare to manufacturing to business services, ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. And now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. First, when you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites. Then ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology hustles for you to find people with the right experience for your job and invites them to apply. In fact, check out this stat. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So add ZipRecruiter to your roster to help you win the hiring game. To try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. From your experiences in these negotiations, what impression did you come away with about the owners?
Yeah, I mean, I think, we've talked about this before, I think you and I, but I grew up in Baltimore and like played football, and you imagine that there are different types of people in the world. And I think of like big time billionaire, like, I don't know, chiefs of industry, I thought they were all like super geniuses, and I never really considered myself something like that. So when I met them, I remember being kind of nervous going into those meetings and like scrambling to learn enough to be able to speak their language, and then going in those meetings and be like, oh no, y'all not geniuses. Like Bill Gates is like someone who we would consider like actually extremely smart. None of them are Bill Gates. Like, it just wasn't my experience. And maybe some of the league has changed. And that's what, frankly, motivated me to, like, apply to a top-tier business school. Because prior to going to those negotiations, I thought that these people were geniuses. And I realized, no, some of them are smart. Some of them are below average, frankly, intelligent. Some of them are, and most of them are, like, mediocre. I think plenty of them got lucky. And many of them work really hard, but they aren't special.
Yeah, like that is, I mean, they're selling ice cream, right?
Yeah.
That's the big part about this is they are selling ice cream. Who doesn't like ice cream? That's like, I'm trying to think of how bad you'd have to be to not make money with a football team. Now, maybe, you know, what they did to get their money on the front end. So you get a guy like Daniel Snyder, who is not doing a good job running that team, though he has made money, but he also was like a super zillionaire at 31.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he got something cracking. You know, on his end, and that he's figured out how to do these things. It's that second generation money that I look at, super suspect, yeah. Right? And like, I mean, even Jerry Jones got his money by digging in the ground, crossing his fingers, and hoping oil popped out.
Yeah, but Jerry Jones, I think you could argue in the history of the league, has had some pretty good ideas.
Yes.
And innovated and sued the league over those Pepsi sponsorships, which ended up making more money for everybody in the league. So Jerry Jones has been innovative in that way, and his like penchant for marketing, like at least he's proven his value. I think the league is in a different place because of him, and especially because of what happened with the Cowboys. And I don't know that you can say that about the rest of them. And surprisingly, the person who I was most impressed with was Clark Hunt, who is a second generation guy. Yeah, he's a second generation guy. He was one of the guys, and I didn't experience all the owners because they have, the same way we had executive committee, they had like a management council. They would bring in some other owners every now and then who weren't a part of the management council, but it was a smaller group of like six guys who would negotiate the deal. And he came in on occasion, and I was like, wow, this guy was really impressive and was really detail oriented and like thoughtful. Whereas some of the other guys were not. And it seemed like they were, not all that sharp necessarily. And also not all that charismatic, because I think you can make up for not being super smart with like people skills. And that's what shocked me when I was like, man, so what you got going for you? Like, how did you get here? Luck? Like, what? And I mean, luck plays a role in all of our lives to some degree. We can't control any of that stuff. But I certainly remember walking out of some of the meetings like, man, I don't know how you got here. And you just got born in the right family or whatever. But I didn't have that feeling with Clark Hunt.
Now, think about how many poorly run franchises have been inherited. Seriously. Like, right. Like, you think about this. Jim Irsay used to be a laughing stock. You actually look at it and like, no, that's probably not fair, right? Like, Irsay is put together for the last almost 25 years. In fact, 25 years, because they made the playoffs in 95. A reasonably competitive team throughout this time. You could say, yeah, they had Peyton Manning, but they made the Andrew Luck transition. Like, he's done a decent job. But like the Giants, for example, everybody talks about how professionally run they are and everything else. Wellington Mara ain't here no more. Mm-mm. That's his son. And they look like they have no idea what they are doing. Who else has got the Bears. I think they're still on second generation. They might be on third by now because Hal has been dead almost 40 years. The Bears, a team that's never been particularly well run. Somebody inherited that. We can go all around. The 49ers, they got this done this year. But, you know, there's always hiccups with the 49ers. That wasn't even inherited. They took the team from the boss and had to give it to somebody else.
Yeah, because he was out there trying to buy casinos or buy gambling rights right down there.
Yo, can I just say, though, that I thought he should have been pardoned?
Oh, really?
Yes, because apparently, I think I read this in the New York Times about that. And for those of you who got some Louisiana roots, you'll appreciate this because it's an Edwin Edwards story. You ever heard of Edwin Edwards?
Yes, I have.
The man who gave us the all-time political quote, "For me to lose, they'd have to catch me in bed with a dead girl or a live boy." He's the one who said that originally, right? Anyway, Edwin had a relationship with Eddie DeBartolo Sr.
Right.
He didn't feel that Eddie DeBartolo Jr. paid him proper respect. And so he intentionally shook him down to get the casino. Wow. And then they all got caught. Edwin went to jail. Eddie stayed out of jail, but Edwin went to the pen for it. That's why I was like, okay, I think a pardon is appropriate here.
Yeah, I mean, he got played, but I mean, I feel like he's doing fine either way. I think the Giants situation is an interesting one because they point to the Super Bowls that they won, and they think the Giants are like a well-run organization because the Mara family sent somebody out there in a suit and glasses all the time, and it makes you think that they are sharp because he don't say nothing over the top. But I think the last several years would suggest to you that they don't got it all buttoned up over there. Just because they look like they got it all buttoned up don't mean that they do.
Same is
obviously true of the Jets.
You also ever notice that Jerry Reese don't never get none of that "you won two Super Bowls, you must be good" credit?
I never thought about that.
And I think that all the criticisms of Reese are legitimate, just to be clear. But the dude's a GM that won two Super Bowls, right? And by the way, largely won two Super Bowls on the one principle that he had that we all know. You can never have too many pass rushes.
Yeah, and now everyone's adopted that principle, I mean, more aggressively since they've done that. And you're right, he did it first, kind of,
right,
where they just kind of had kind of race car package is what they called it, right? Yep. Or NASCAR.
Yep, I just want to know who's running the place right, because it ain't the owners. It wasn't him. It damn sure ain't Dave Gettleman. Like, if they are the team that people say they are, it would be that. Oh, your boy Mike Brown? That's that second-generation money out there.
Yeah, they used to be so hot in the negotiations. I feel like the statute of limitations has passed. There are some stories I won't tell that happened in there, but I feel like this one, I won't put any names on it, but they were so hot at him, and they hated one. I mean, they hated a lot of things about him, but one of the things they hated the most was the naming rights.
Mm-hmm.
He would come with his hand out trying to get some revenue share from the big market teams, and they like, "You not even maximizing your revenue," and he like, "But the stadium named after my daddy and I ain't changing that." Hated him.
I kind of respect it.
I mean, well, I respect it up until you come with your hand out. Because you get no principle. Like, I would give it to you if you're like, "Man, I'm gonna leave tens of million dollars on the table because my daddy name on this stadium." But he ain't do that. He said, "I'm going to take tens of millions from you because my daddy name on that stadium." There were several owners in our meetings who were not afraid to name check him in particular. Like, "See, we got a problem with guys like," and go off.
Because the other thing about him, too, is he's not like an actual, like, he obviously has this $1 billion asset now, right? So he's obviously fairly rich, but his dad was a football coach. Right? Like, Mike Brown used to be he's the general manager now. He used to be the general manager there. Like, he is the son of a football coach who got in when the Bengals started and got him some shares, and then they turned it into whatever. But he is not a capitalist in the way that these other guys are capitalists. He's just cheap and trying to get himself a little bread.
Yeah, but I mean, go ahead and sell that thing. Go ahead and sell that thing and go elsewhere.
He'll never sell it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
He'll never sell it. He'll be out there not watching them dudes. They got to watch their jock straps at home and everything else. Like, the cheap stories around the Bengals are like the cheap stories that used to be with Bob Johnson at the Hornets, where I recall somebody saying something to the effect of, I think they had to pay for their own Gatorade.
No.
I think so. I think they had to pay for their Gatorade. I know one year, the year they drafted Gerald Henderson. Gerald Henderson was on Minnesota's summer league team that year and not Charlotte's. And coincidentally, Minnesota had drafted Wayne Ellington, Gerald Henderson's best friend from high school, because Bob wasn't sending no summer league team.
Oh, my gosh. I wonder, like, again, back to our TV show about the workings of the ownership class. Like, I feel like at least one or two of them have gotten together and plotted on
Mike Brown.
Oh, Mike Brown, once or twice. They plotted on him. They tried to send V. Stiviano out there to get him. They thought about it. They recorded some of his phone calls to see if he slipped up.
But something has to happen, right? Something has to happen. Moves have to be made here. Oh, we in second generation down there in Tampa. When's the last time they were good?
Ooh.
Right. Like, the one owner I do feel like from this comfortable distance, you tell me if I'm wrong, that I look at that man, and I'm like, that's a competent man right there. That's Arthur Blank. That appears to be a competent man.
He comes across as competent to me. Like, he was not on the management council. He was in several of the meetings, but he seems competent enough. I mean, I think they're mostly competent, I guess. But I think that one of the things that is also super interesting is, like, we live in a country that is very, very in love with capitalism. And, like, the NFL is capitalist in so many ways and socialist in so many other ways. But the one way that we don't ever really consider is the fact that they are allowed to exist as a cartel, which protects all of their teams from, like, the competitive forces that would kill other businesses. Like, I wouldn't mind living in a world where it's like, and I guess the example of this is like the English Premier League, where you have relegation or whatever. Like, can't we live in a world where there's a lot of football teams and only 20 of them are in the NFL and the other 12 of them are in, I don't know, the XFL, and they got to earn their way back into the NFL? Because I feel like some teams just trot out garbage after garbage, and they're unwilling to take risks. They're unwilling to try anything different, and they are protected financially and protected in many other ways by the fact that they are a part of the NFL. And they're like, we just going to keep stinking. Nah, we ain't going to hire no different kind of coach. Nah, we going to go retread this GM. What? A quarterback that can run? That's foolish. And they just keep doing this same old nonsense because they are safe. Like, relegation, I feel like when next time somebody asks me about how to fix the Rooney Rule, I'm going to say relegation.
Yo, I had not thought about this, but you are right. In another industry, somebody would have been come set up a new team in Detroit.
My God, that would have been dead long time ago. They've been in the playoffs like twice in 20 years or more, maybe. They would have never made it.
Yeah, I think they've been twice in 20 years. They have not won a league championship, I want to say, since the 1950s. They have won one playoff game since the 1950s, and that was in 1991.
I mean, the fact that they exist as this cartel, I think, means that you probably make more money because you can negotiate for the bigger, like, TV deals, and you have leverage to do that, and you're not competing against anybody else. Because you go the other way, they probably make less money overall. The Cowboys have a TV deal that's worth $1 billion, and everybody else is trying to get the scraps, unless you got Patrick Mahomes. However, I do think the product would be better if they had to really fight for it. You know, like, they really had to fight for it. There is some real competition where if you fail and fail, which is true in every other industry, you go under. You don't survive by just being perpetually stinky.
The one problem, though, boy, you relegate that NFL team to whatever that lower league is, and it's still a squad full of NFL players, they going 16-0 in AAA.
All right, well, they come back up. But, I mean, you redistribute the talent also. I think that you have something new. Like, you have an opportunity for a relegated team or another team to make it in and take over. Like, obviously, I haven't thought this completely out.
Yeah, but I like the idea, though.
Up against the wall. But I think that there are impacts that will happen that we haven't thought of, and people will be willing to take a risk. So, like, that's what happens in college. There's 100-something football teams in college, and essentially, that's closer to an open market. That's why we get innovation in college, because they like, we ain't got the talent. We gonna figure some way out to compete. Let's hand this ball to our best athlete and figure some things out. Let's find ways to compete that isn't just banging our head against their head. And I think it's worked out.
You know what team got the best owner, though?
Who that?
Packers.
I don't know. I've been to Wisconsin plenty of times.
I'm just saying, they ain't got no owner. That's why they own the best one.
Yeah, I knew where you were going with that, but their people own the team, and they're kind of annoying.
Yeah, no, that is correct. But I do think it's very interesting that one of the best functioning franchises is the one that doesn't have an owner.
That's fair. I mean, that is super interesting. But what's that guy's name? I forgot his name. The guy who runs it.
Mark Murphy.
Mark Murphy. Yeah, that's right. I don't know. They've changed their tact. I think that people would hit them with the same thing that you hit the Colts with, is like, you went from quarterback to quarterback, which I guess is, you could argue that is a skill, a drafting.
Well, I think it's different. The Colts got kind of lucky, right? It was an obvious pick draft when they got the second quarterback. Now, what they do with the third, we're going to see, right? But that one wasn't that hard. And Peyton Manning, I mean, I guess maybe hindsight, 50-50, as Cam Newton said, all that, okay, cool. But, you know, Peyton Manning over Ryan Leaf, looking back, I can't believe we talked ourselves into that actually being, like, compelling. Yeah. I thought they should have taken Leaf, right. But that's neither here nor there. But the Packers, at least, where I would give the Packers credit is, Aaron Rodgers was not an obvious pick, and they took him when they didn't need him. They were just like, yo, get it, do it. We'll figure it out later.
So people in Cleveland going to be mad at me, and it crosses multiple owners, so maybe they don't deserve the credit. But like, I feel like Baltimore is the place that has been consistently good without quarterbacks. Like, they've managed to, and that's all Ozzie Newsome, I guess, which the ownership had the bright idea of hiring Ozzie Newsome or promoting him to general manager, which I guess he was the general manager before he got named general manager. But, I'm trying to think of any other team that's like had been sustained success without going from Hall of Fame quarterback or All Pro quarterback to All Pro quarterback. I don't know anybody else out there that's doing that.
And remember the way it shook out with Ozzie was Belichick had control of the personnel in Cleveland, and then they gave it to Ozzie. And by the way, I can make an argument that Ozzie's a better personnel man than Bill Belichick is.
Make the argument. There's no conversation. Like, I don't even think, I would be interested in see how you make the argument the other way.
Well,
like,
just the rings. That's the only way.
Yeah, but that's not an argument.
Right.
Like, that's, yeah. Belichick, I don't think, like, obviously Belichick knows football and he is good at using the talent he has. But when I think of Bill Belichick and the teams that he has, I think that Bill Belichick, the coach, is making Bill Belichick, the general manager, look good.
Yes.
Because I'm not sure that he's found a way to get the best out of all of his players. I guess you point to Gronk, maybe Damian Woody, or finding Brady in the sixth round.
Yeah, so like, we're looking at great players that Belichick has drafted. All right. It really ain't no long list, right?
Exactly. That's my point. Yeah, Newsom got two Hall of Famers in his first draft.
In his first draft in Baltimore.
First draft.
I walked in the door with Ogden and Ray Lewis.
You know what I'm going to give you? Hall of Famers. Bang. Bang. Off the top.
Two of them. Think about this. He brought them in 96. They drafted Peter Boulware in 97.
What?
Right. And he was one of those forgotten great players, right? They brought Peter Boulware in 97. Oh my God. Like, Ozzie was just like, yeah, I'll get this. If you want to score some points. I mean, we'll talk about that later. But we'll get this. But Belichick. So here's who I've got, like, really good players that he drafted. Richard Seymour.
Right.
Vince Wilfork. It starts slowing down, baby.
Right.
Get guys like Logan Mankins, like some offensive line dudes that they kind of had. Like, what I feel like Belichick like Dr. Dre. You know how many of them dudes will wind up on one of those chronics and you'd be like, damn, whatever happened to Hitman? Right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, Hitman was all over 2001. And then you realize the only person that knows how to make it work with Hitman is Dr. Dre.
Exactly.
That's what Belichick doing with his roster.
I don't think of Belichick that way. I know people would do that rings thing, but like, I think that like him getting the most out of some of these players who we would consider not all that talented is a credit to Bill Belichick. They go elsewhere, they ain't good. They come from elsewhere and all of a sudden they're good there. It's like, it's not him being talent evaluator or GM. I guess the GM part is possibly the idea that they went for like mid-tier guys mostly. You know, like they didn't go for big free agents necessarily unless they needed a cornerback. It's the only time they spend money in the trade for Randy Moss.
Oh, and the one they wish they had back, Adalius Thomas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was pretty good.
Yeah. In Baltimore.
Yeah. I know. He was good at Baltimore.
Ozzie looking at Bill like, yo, I'm Ozzie and I let him go. What you think that means, dog?
Yeah, that didn't work out for him. Yeah, Ozzie, one thing you know, Ozzie gonna get them defensive players right. So I'm just looking at it. You got Ray, you got Ogden, Boulware, Reed, Suggs, Nada. Like, these are all Hall of Famers. Well, I guess Boulware is not Hall of Famer. These are just, he's just giving you Hall of Fame on top of Hall of Fame on top of Hall of Famer. Like, I don't know, Marshall Yonda, he's going to the Hall of Fame. He just retired, I think, recently. Like, that's the only offensive guy I'm looking at.
You drafted Jamal Lewis.
Oh, Jamal Lewis. That's right. And then he had, Jermaine Lewis. Go Terps. He was not a Hall of Famer, but he was an effective player. Give him that.
Now, there was another. Let me talk about Boulware's Hall of Famer.
McAllister.
Oh, I forgot about
that
one.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Dwayne Starks.
Oh, God. He is so good at this.
Yeah, and don't forget this about Boulware. I feel like if Boulware played in this era, we would think of him differently, because where he doesn't get enough credit is, there's a lot of dudes that can play 4-3 defensive end and 3-4 outside linebacker. That dude was a strong side linebacker in the 4-3 and then go play end on third down.
That's impressive.
Right. Like that Baltimore team, like the runs, like they had that run where they had Michael McCrary for a little bit, who's another guy like Boulware that you forget how good he was.
McCrary was a heck of a pass rusher.
Yep. Just out here just playing for the Ravens. Nobody really thinking about it, because by the time we knew they were Super Bowl good, it was the Super Bowl.
My God, I just, man.
The Ozzy is that
Bill
dude.
Bill Belichick compared to Ozzy. You stop it.
Dude, you Baltimore dudes love Ozzy, man. Y'all love Ozzy. I'm not shading you for it. I just noticed y'all love that dude.
I mean, he's a good dude, man. He's a good dude. He know what he doing. He's signing them checks and he drafting good players. It's hard to not like Ozzy.
He won a Super Bowl with R. Modell as his boss, right?
He did.
Because that's what we're talking about, where the ownership part gets tricky, is that Ozzy did it with two owners.
Yeah, yeah. Some days you need to give him a team. Stop playing around. You need to take the Browns from Haslam and give them to Ozzy. That's where he belong anyway, right? He's a Cleveland, or he played in Cleveland. He's an Alabama guy, though.
Oh, he's a Tennessee guy. He's the big... Ooh. Haslam, he's the big.
Oh no, no, I was talking about Ozzy.
Oh, Ozzy, yeah, he is. He's like you said, he is a Bear Bryant disciple, right?
Oh yeah, he loves Bear Bryant. When I talk to him about Bear Bryant, I talk to him about like race and justice and the civil rights movement and all that. Ozzy Newsom hit me with some curveballs. They were well thought out, so it wasn't. But it wasn't what I expected from somebody from Alabama until I talked to him, and then I was like, oh yeah, this all makes a lot more sense.
Let me tell you something,
a black man from Alabama.
Let me tell you something, man. You grow up in Alabama, and Bear Bryant is like, I just want you to be good at football. That is so much different than anything else you have ever heard from the local white man.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, we talked about this. Gronk. Pat's Gronk. They took another tight end that year who I got to say was pretty talented.
Are we opening that up so I can say Ray Rice for Ozzie Newsome now?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I skipped over that name because I was like, I don't feel like opening that can of worms.
Nah, man. I mean, if we being honest, his football days was kind of done by the end of that anyway, right?
That is absolutely fair.
Yeah, no, but I mean, now Belichick, he drafted Aaron Hernandez and Gronk in the same year. That's a pretty impressive one. I went through Patriots draft classes one time, and I was like, this is a hit or miss proposition here.
Yeah, and the Gronk one was like, people knew Gronk was good, but they had injury concerns, right? That's why he slid.
Yes, well, I mean, same thing with Aaron Hernandez in the fourth round. Well, not injury concerns, concerns.
Yeah, had concerns. Yeah, they were fantastic together. And I mean, not many people are doing that. And that's why I think it's like the innovation. Like you can give, he's the greatest coach we've ever had. His ability to innovate and find ways to succeed has been impressive, but he ain't no draft god. That's not him.
Like that dude that he was out watching in the rain at Middle Tennessee State. I was like, do we even know if he's good?
Bill just trolling us. Like at this point, he knows he's Bill Belichick, and he knows that if he go watch something out in the rain in Middle Tennessee State, we're gonna be like, man, that man's such a football guy.
Now hold on. Now this is where Belichick will get you too. Gabe just mentioned Chandler Jones is the guy he drafted, which was a dude, by the way, he drafted that nobody else would have drafted when he drafted him. And then he did the classic Belichickian thing with Chandler Jones, which was time's up.
not pay him.
Yep, Richard Seymour. Time's up. Vince Wilfork. I mean, we're not going to get rid of you, but we're not going to re-sign you.
Oh, yeah. Not Ty Law, because Ty Law stuck it out for many years. Lawyer Malloy.
Oh.
Time's up.
Remember when we thought it was all going to fall apart because of how he did Lawyer Malloy, and then they won like 14 games that year?
Nope.
The team's going to turn on you, and they lost the first game of the year 31-0 and never looked back.
Nope.
Belichick. You saw that thing Tlaib said to Belichick God. On the phone when it was like, if you want to go make a lot of money, go somewhere else. If you want to win, come here.
That if that ain't Suge Knight, I don't know what is. Like, that's the Sugiest thing I've ever heard an NFL front office person, because that's what he is in that capacity, say to anybody. Like, is that not the dancing in the videos quote?
Yes.
Is that not that?
That's exactly what it is. Come to death row. We right here. By the way, where do you think Brady going to go?
Tennessee.
I can see Tennessee. I think I had leaned in on this being, was Tennessee the team I was thinking about? I think the Chargers are probably a little bit more attractive a destination that people give him credit for, but I love this idea of him going to San Francisco. By the way, none of these teams will be glad that they took Tom Brady. But the idea that Kyle Shanahan, and after I've been arguing with people, Kyle Shanahan agrees with me about Jimmy Garoppolo.
I mean, I think that you already said this, though, but like at halftime, they were going into the half and he decided to run out the clock. Like that was the moment.
Yes.
And I mean, throughout the rest of the playoffs, when he was throwing the ball four times a game, he demonstrated he might as well wore a flat brimmed hat that said, I'm with Bo, because like, he demonstrated the confidence that he had in him. Right.
But, and they but people kept telling me, well, it's just because they didn't need to do that no more. And da da da. What I'll never understand, though, is how all of a sudden he got all the confidence in the world at the end of the game.
Yeah, that was a weird shift. But I think that I still think that was a demonstration of him like, man, we gotta, cause the passes that he threw were in non-passing situations. Yeah. That was him saying, I don't want to get in a situation where it's third and eight.
Right.
And everybody like, man, we gotta pass. That was him saying, I don't have no confidence in him making this when the stakes are high. He gonna have to complete some passes. Let's do it on first and second down.
Yes. That I think that's fair. And well, we kind of see how that went.
The eyes closed interception. I appreciate that you keeping that alive, cause I forgot it. But we need to continue to remind people that in the Super Bowl,
every now and then something happens that you just can't come back from in somebody's mind, right? So I remember I was talking to Warren Sapp about this, and he, like, with Darren McFadden. Apparently Darren McFadden had a cortisone shot in his foot before his first NFL game.
Oh.
And Sapp was like, oh, out, done. Yeah. Like, he got a ball on his foot already. Never going to happen. And by the way, turned out to be right. I saw Jimmy Garoppolo throw that interception with his eyes closed. Nah, man, I'm out on this. I'm out on this. No chance.
I mean, actually, so we here have been like feeding this, even though it may not be a realistic possibility. But I like the logic behind it makes sense to me, because if you have a team, assuming their defense is going to come back, and I know defense is volatile, doesn't always come back as good, but what you can count on is a running attack and a Shanahan offense. So Assuming the running attack holds up, you're not going to ask much of Tom Brady. I think the teams that will be disappointed in Tom Brady is the teams that think that Tom Brady is going to be your offense, or that you can rely on Tom Brady for 16 or 17 games and then through the playoffs. I think San Francisco's a good spot because they're going to run the ball. They're going to let him throw some play action here and there. He can throw the ball 12 to 20 times a game. But at the end of the game or end of half situations, they won't have to curl up. They won't have to kneel it. They're going to be in full confidence, and Kyle Shanahan don't even have to call no more plays. He can just hand the ball over to Tom Brady and let him work. Like, that is where his advantage lies. That's where all his physical limitations as he ages, they start to get equalized with his, like, knowledge and experience.
But can he run the stretch? Can he run the boot?
They figure something out, man.
I mean, I guess Peyton Manning figured it out, right?
Yeah, they figure something out. I think they will be able to fix something. He can run a boot.
Right? Like, the amazing thing about that 2015, Denver held on to Peyton Manning 1 year too long and still won the Super Bowl. Because they gave him 2 months to figure out how to play when he couldn't play. Remember that? They were like, he's hurt. He'll be back at some point. And he missed like the last 8 games of the year. And they were just like, look, man. And when he came back, he figured out, okay, so these are the things I used to be able to do that I can't do anymore. Got it. Stop doing those things.
Yeah. I gotta rewatch that playoff run to see what he actually did, because all I really remember is the Super Bowl, and he was a net negative for his football team in the Super Bowl.
He was.
That's all I remember. So maybe he was able to find something that he could do, because like, I feel like the Peyton Manning is the argument for Tom Brady, but the Super Bowl that they actually won, that's an argument against
Tom
Brady.
They held on. They held on 1 year too late. One year too long. They held on. That was it. Oh, man. Yo, Dominique Foxworth. Check my man out at theundefeated.com. It's always a pleasure when we do this, man.
It was. It was a rough start. I don't know why, but it turned out to... I feel like we normally have fun at the top. We didn't get to the fun till the end.
Yeah, we started laughing at the owners.
Yeah, that's more like it.
Everything turned itself out right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to ZipRecruiter. Thanks to 5-Hour Energy. Also, thank you to My Computer Career. Remember to subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You can give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.